Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. Informed, intelligent, irreverent, political persuasions with Mike O'Mara and Chris Frakes. And now, here's Mike.
There you two go again, sneaking behind my back and selecting these solid pieces of music.
This is Lil Rascal's Brass Band. It was Mardi Gras this week, Mike, so I was in a kind of New Orleans kind of mood when we were choosing our music, and so this
you
is
know
one
I
of
love
the,
that city.
One of the best second line songs out there. It's a really quality tune.
You know, New Orleans, Louisiana, I recently had an appearance there for the Mike O'Mara show, and
They
came out for me, and I was chatting, I believe, with a doctor from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hot man.
Having a lovely conversation. She's a big fan of the show, and as I'm talking to him, a gentleman came up and began to mount a trash can in back of us with his pants around his knees. That's the city of New Orleans.
That's the city of New Orleans right there. Just depravity rules.
You never know what you're going to find on the streets of New Orleans. And you have to be, there's just a warning, if you've never been to the Big Easy, I should say, just keep your head up. You want to, especially if you go out of the quarter, keep your head up and know your whereabouts.
Watch
that's
where
just
you're going.
My advice. It's a little rough.
Pickpockets and loose women.
It is
the classic sign.
It is our 300th episode of Political Persuasions. I could not be more thrilled. We are here, and I will
take my role in fact check as usual. I think it's 10, but
10. Okay,
you know, it
10.
Feels like 300. It's been at least 3,000 news cycles since we've been doing this. But
I will say this: a lot of people have been reaching out and telling us how they love the show, and I will tell you, Mr. Frates, I'm having a great time doing this show, and it's going to be an interesting show today because I'm going to put the spotlight on you later in this this little show just
stay
to find
tuned.
Out exactly what's going on.
I'm the one who usually asks the questions around here.
I know.
And,
well, you ask questions and you also bring me back to reality when I start spouting off. And speaking of spouting off, it's another day,
it's
another tragedy. Parkland, Florida, which is about 2 hours across the state from me, down where I live, down here in Estero, Florida. And another horrible mass shooting. And what stuns me about this story is we are talking about 18, count them, 18 school shootings in the year so far. It's February, and we have already had 18 of these incidents.
Every two and a half days, we have a school shooting in this.
It's nuts.
This
and look, I got on social media last night because this is of all political issues that I talk about, this is a political issue that is very, very, very near and dear to my heart. I just have always believed that the way we approach gun violence in the United States of America is nothing short of insane. I spend a lot of time thinking about it. I spend a lot of time obsessing on it. I spend a lot of time just wondering why we are the way we are. This is the only country in modern civilization that has this type of gun violence and the amount of it. And yet we continue to love our guns. You know, you can come down here to South Florida. You can go to the suburbs of Washington, D.C., Chris, up there, and you can go on any weekend and see one of these gun shows where you can walk into an open hallway and on card tables splayed out right in front of you, some of the most amazing weaponry that you can plunk down your hard-earned money and walk out and put it in your car. And I'm going to tell you something that I have never been more sensitive to that fact than I am today, because I think that I got to a point last night when I was hearing about this tragedy that I just said, instead of throwing my hands up in the air and saying, nothing's ever going to change, nothing's going to go, we're never going to have sensible gun legislation, I said to myself last night, well, I'm going to squawk about it some more, because you know what? I'm tired of throwing my hands up in the air and saying nothing's going to change. The fact is, I think it was the coach of the Golden State Warriors that said, yeah, things will change if we put people in office that actually think about protecting children. And you can talk about mental health. You can talk about the FBI being warned about this guy. It doesn't really matter if you have a 19-year-old unstable kid that is able to acquire legally something that is designed for one reason and one reason only, and that's to inflict mass casualties on human beings. So here I am. I am not shy about saying it. I am very much for gun control. I don't need to put sensible gun control because I believe gun control is sensible. Preventing these weapons from getting into the wrong hands is essential. And if people have to sacrifice their guns, collectors, shooters, hunters, I don't give a rat's ass about it. I am real happy to say, okay, well, you know what? You got to sacrifice your gun lust for a while because the fact is there are certain few in our society that go out and shoot 17 innocent children. I'm sorry it happened, but it did. So everybody's going to have to make a sacrifice for the greater good so we don't have this happen again. It's kind of a variant of my my little speech that I gave on the Mike O'Mara show today, but this is a sad one, and being a father, I look at this and just think about what those parents are dealing with today. It's stunning.
Yeah, it's stunning, and so to put it in perspective, Mike, you know, the deadliest school shooting in American history, of course, was Sandy Hook that happened in December of 2012. Since then, we've had 439 people shot in 273 school shootings. 112 of those people who were shot were killed, and we have 12 of those were mass shootings, which are defined as four or more people shot in one incident. So when you look at those numbers, it seems like if it were anything else, if it were drugs, if it were other kinds of crime,
terrorism,
it would be a public health or a national security issue. And because
emergency, I would go further to say it would be an emergency.
And I have a lot of feelings about this, having covered this for a really long time and listened to both sides of this debate, who you very nicely kind of encapsulated the left on that. You know, the right talks about, you know, the right to bear arms, something that is constitutionally protected. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what has happened in this country, you know, I don't know that I'm where you are in terms of something's got to change, because I don't see systemically what's going to change. When you have 20 children killed at Sandy Hook, six teachers mowed down, then yep. you have a member of Congress shot in the face doing her job, you know, mm-hmm. talking to constituents at a supermarket on a Saturday morning. When you have majority whip of Congress shot during a baseball practice, in Steve Scalise. I mean, here you have not just, you know, victims, you know, who are constituents, you have our leaders
yep.
being shot, mm-hmm. You know, by gun crazed lunatics, yet nothing changes. You know, we saw after Sandy Hook, you know, a bipartisan push to cap how big the magazines are, some other kind of very, you know, small, minimal changes that couldn't even get through. I don't think, you know, this all kind of goes back to the 1990s. Democrats who were for the Brady Bill, who were for banning assault weapons, lost their seats in Congress thanks to the NRA. And nobody has roared up since to change that. And that's, you know, the usual way that things work in Washington, where you have a ingrained special interest that's going to fight tooth and nail to protect that. And then you have the majority who say, well, you know, that makes sense. Let's do something around sensible gun laws. When you look at the polling, many people will say, yeah, we should have background checks. Yeah, we mm-hmm. should cap how many bullets can be in a magazine. Why do we need lethal weapons that are military grade in our society? But there's no political push here. You have Mike Bloomberg with Everytown USA trying to kind of create that.
Everytown for gun safety. I'm a member of that organization.
My question to you then, Mike, mm-hmm. is, you know, you're talking about it. You're fired up here. But what do you think, you know, needs to happen? I mean,
sometimes you need to have something. You need to be reminded of something, Chris, which I was reminded. And I wish I had the name, but I don't. And sometimes I don't on this show. I'm sorry. I'm not a professional pundit, so I don't do that. But it's the head coach of the Golden State Warriors who said, this is how you change things. You change things by voting in people that are going to put in legislation. That's it. And as you said, these guys lost their jobs because the NRA has a tremendous amount of money and a tremendous amount of power. And we've heard that narrative. Here's what happens. After Las Vegas, I did throw my hands up in the air, and I felt very similar to what you just described, where I said, well, it's not going to change. You
and then talked the about church the, shooting a the few system, weeks later.
The church shooting. You throw your hands up in the air and you say, there's nothing we can do. Well, I guess what I feel today is just a sense of being reinvigorated to the fight, that just because things aren't going to change and just because maybe political leaders are afraid, that doesn't change the fact. I remember just moments ago watching our Governor Rick Scott down here, who has taken who has taken money from right-wing organizations that I think are tied into the NRA. I don't know the specific numbers, but you're watching this, and of course he immediately starts talking about mental health, because mental health right now, make no mistake about it, is the ultimate smokescreen by the National Rifle Association. Mental health is what they want you to be talking about. They want you to talk about the FBI was warned about this shooter. They want you to talk about mental health, that this kid needed some treatment. They want you to talk about everything besides the most important thing you should be talking about. And that is the fact that a 19-year-old kid had an AR-15 that he was able to use without a hell of a lot of skill to take out 17 students, 17 kids who will not have a future, 17 kids who are leaving behind devastated families. And I am reinvigorated. That's why I talked about it on my other show, because a lot of people say, you know, a lot of people, especially people that love their guns, will say, Mike, you're there to be funny. One of the posts that I read on a thread of mine said, sing, man, you're an entertainer, no more, no less. That's what he wanted me to do.
Sure.
Just go out there and entertain, be fluffy and stuff like that. I'm not doing it. And I think that the fact is, this in my mind is not something that I'm going to accept going forward. And I don't care how long it takes, because the fact is...
So what do you do besides talk about it?
You try to get people elected who will change the law.
Okay.
You try to
so
get people
that mean
elected.
For you?
Is it daunting? In my district with Congressman Rooney... I am not sure, because we have the reddest district in the state of Florida. I am not sure if the Democratic candidate can mount a successful run against him. And I'm not sure whether the single issue of guns would be enough to do it. It might be Trump. It might be a lot of things. We're talking about the midterms. We plan to talk about that later on in the program. What it does for me is it wants me to see more energy with the midterm. This is just another, when you say, what can you do? I tack this on as another issue for midterms, because the fact is, as you stated, the majority of people in this country, NRA members included, want sensible gun legislation.
Right.
I love, you know, I feel when I say that I'm playing into the NRA's hands when I say sensible gun. No, I'm going to say gun legislation. To prevent, yeah, you know, it wasn't all that long ago, Chris, you correct me if I'm wrong, but where we had an assault ban, where you couldn't buy these weapons.
We did, and what happened there, though, is, you know, they banned, you know, they would ban the AR-15, right? Let's say we do it again. Okay, that thing has killed all kinds of people, mass shootings. Let's ban it from civilian use. Well, then the gun manufacturers just turn around and tweak the AR-15, call it the AR-18, and they make a couple of different modifications to it and then put out another gun. So it becomes...
And what is that? When you really... And I'm going to stop you right there. What is that when you really think of it, other than a company for profit to maximize their profit, subverting laws in America to provide and put killing machines in the hands of people? There's nothing noble about it. There's nothing patriotic about it. This is something that the fact of the matter is that these machines are designed to inflict mass casualties. In a way, you could call them weapons of mass destruction. And when you mention that in passing, it just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
I get
so angry.
But the fact of the matter is, there's a constitutional right to carry and bear arms, and there has not been a lot of regulation around what that means in this country.
A constitutional right that was designed back when men were wearing knee socks and wearing
powdered
wigs.
I'm not saying we, you know, and they were loading, you know, as gun control advocates would say, they were loading muskets one ball at a time, and it took, you know, 2 minutes to get a shot off, and now you can, you know, roll off hundreds of shots in 2 minutes. But the point being that you know, it's a complicated debate and there isn't an easy answer, particularly in a country that's already awash in guns. Even if you said tomorrow we're going to ban all gun sales.
That is an NRA talking point, and I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to tell
you
that
it's true.
It's awash in guns, which doesn't mean that you can't stop these guns from getting into the hands anymore. Get the AR-15s. I don't care. Here's the thing. The NRA likes to scare people. They're going to take all your guns. I'm going full radical on this now and say, so what? So what? The fact is, if you really think, look at the statistics. If you really think that having these guns in your home is going to protect you, I would just say break out the statistics,
Mike,
and take a look,
Mike,
at the odds of you shooting your wife to death in a dark room compared to the scenario playing out in a James Bond movie where somebody breaks through the window and you're able to shoot them.
Have you ever owned a gun?
I have never owned a gun.
Right.
I am proud to say I've never owned a gun.
So you never grew up in a gun culture, a hunting culture, a culture.
That's not true. I grew up in rural Connecticut where deer hunting was prominent about probably 80% of my neighborhood. There were a lot of kids that went out with their fathers and shot deer.
Right, so, but did you?
No.
Okay. So when I talk, and I didn't either, but when I talk to people about their guns, it's not just, when they're going to listen to you and hear them say, yeah, get rid of all the guns. What do you need guns for?
I didn't say get rid of all the guns. What I'm saying is I'll modify that.
Okay.
None of the kids that went out and went deer hunting with their fathers went out with an AR-15 to hunt that. And as far as...
So you're saying let's get rid of assault weapons. That's what you're saying.
I'm actually saying we have to be radical in our gun legislation, not sensible. We need to what's insanity is not anything other than what we have in the headlines today, which is 17 kids shot to death.
Mm-hmm.
That to me means all bets are off the table. When I hear about a story,
so what's
like
different
this,
between that and Sandy Hook 6 years ago?
There is no. I felt the same way after Sandy Hook, and I felt the same way after the Pulse nightclub. I felt the same way after Las Vegas. The fact is, we're too relaxed about it. We're too, when you say, have you ever grown up in a family with guns? Like it's some, like I have some disconnect. I don't. I know what guns do. I've been to a shooting range. I've fired a weapon. I could own a gun if I wanted. I'm a public figure. I've had run-ins with listeners in the past when I thought maybe it'd be a good idea to keep a gun for protection. I read the statistics that indicate that I'm more likely to do damage to somebody I love or know if I have a gun in my house, then I'm not. That's the big statistic that I've always lived my life by. It's the reason I don't bring guns into my house. I've shot skeet. I've shot shotguns. I've done this before. I'm just saying I think that if anything, the approach of being reasonable and the approach of being of compromise and the, I think we have to shout louder now. We have to shout as loud as certain other factions in this country shout about political issues. It got a man elected president because people were angry. And I think I would like to see the American people get as angry as I am today about this ridiculously dastardly organization known as the National Rifle Association that promotes guns for manufacturers of guns.
Right. Well, that's what they do. It's a legal enterprise in the United States. It always has been, and that's what they do. But what was interesting to me, Mike, to watch was the White House, because we didn't hear from Donald Trump. You know, he didn't take to Twitter. He didn't come out.
Not for a while, right.
He didn't come out. His aides yesterday were saying, we need to, you really should get out there. And having watched Barack Obama, watched him, cry over Newtown. I was in the White House the morning he came out to talk about the Orlando nightclub shooting. And it was just a guy who seemed, I think at that point there had been 18 mass shootings during his 8 years of the presidency. And he just seemed so resigned, right? So beaten down.
Yeah.
Like there's just,
probably felt the same way during those times.
Too. And it was interesting to watch him. And that is something that I don't miss about news reporting is, kind of having to live and breathe this stuff because it is so, it just
crushes.
Yeah. It crushes your spirit. It really does. And so like talk to these families and to, you know, be on the air all day long talking about this just unimaginable tragedy, you know, that I have a hard time even reading the coverage anymore, and I can't get up in arms about it because the emotional energy it takes, I still haven't like recovered it from, you know, whether it, you know, and the same goes for terrorism attacks, right? So whether it's Paris or Orlando, Vegas, the church shootings, I mean, like they're all over the place. It's like exhausting. And I just wonder if, you know, I hear a renewed sense of passion and resolve from you. And I have seen some
because
of that.
Because I'm optimistic. Let me just say why that is. I also think I'm optimistic about the midterm elections, that I think that hopefully we can, on the, you know, the traditional midterm spike for the party in opposition, can maybe get some people in there that can move some of this stuff along. The fact is, if you get the, here's the fact, and people are so...
Well, you're not going to move any of it along because President Trump is the president still.
I understand that for you know, 3 more years. The fact is, though, that you get people in. It's a process. It starts. You start the process. And I'm going to maintain my optimism that we have to do this.
Right.
We have to do this.
I understand, but I want to finish what I was going to say, which was that I wonder, you know, I hear the resolve from you, and you've made clear why you have that resolve. But I wonder how many people are just exhausted and have thrown up their hands.
I felt like that.
And it will be interesting to see if this.
I'm reinvigorated.
You know, kind of Democrats moving forward, we'll see kind of what comes, if anything, from a Republican Congress and a Trump administration. But, you know, I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Trump administration and this idea of John Kelly, you know, really.
We're done with guns.
Yeah, man, we got to move on. We're halfway through the show.
Well, let me just say that I just want to say one last thing on it, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
I do hope that that my reinvigorated attitude on this is shared by more Americans, and I think there might be a chance that there is. I feel differently, maybe because I'm down here in South Florida where this happened, but what really motivates me is hearing some of the kids talk to that are talking about gun legislation. And I think we can all agree that the future of our country depends on our young people. You hear it a lot. It's a soundbite, but I believe it. And if more people can support this kind of stuff, I think there is a possibility that we can get laws in this country that protect kids, period. Not even going to mention the G-U-N word. Why? I just want laws in this country that protect people. Keep things that kill people out of people's hands, period. That's it. That's what I want. And I don't think it's unreasonable. And I don't think that there is anything standing between us and this other than a well-financed lobbying organization and weak-minded legislators.
And that's millions all. Of people who feel exactly opposite of you.
I think there are people in the NRA, the overwhelming majority of people. Well, are we on with Dana Perino now on Fox? I'm curious about this. You know, I mean, is this why you're not at CNN anymore? Is that why this is happening right now? Are you a closet righty? Is that what it is? Is that because that's the first thing you said right there? Do you own a gun?
Right. Because
do you own a gun?
No, I do not. Question. I do not own a gun.
All right. I just checking. I won't.
I do not own a gun, and I also feel like, you know, most of that segment was you. You know, your impassioned plea for your feelings on this, which are, you know, right and vital. But I also feel always a responsibility to our other listeners who sit on the other side of this.
Hell of a responsibility today. I don't care about
that. No, I mean, but Mike, I mean, they feel, I've talked to them, I've interviewed them. It's not just.
I get letters from them, believe me.
Right. It's not just the NRA. It's people who say, look, this is. You know, the government can't solve this. The government shouldn't solve this, and it's not their place. And they feel just as adamant as you do about that. And so I want to recognize that while certainly millions of people feel as you do, there are millions more who are electing legislators who are standing up for their values. I mean, President Trump was elected on a "don't mess with our guns" platform as part of what he was campaigning on. That's not a mistake. And so to say, you know, well, we have moral high ground and, you know, everybody else is wrong, there are millions of people who would disagree with you. I just want to give them some voice and some do that, because if everyone felt like you, we wouldn't have this problem.
I just wish that they would get to a grief center over in Parkland, Florida, and sit down for a while and watch what that. They might change their attitude if they were over. It's really easy to talk in ideals when you're talking about that. You know, don't take our guns. And you're right. A lot of people in this country believe in this. We're like no other country in the world.
Right.
We are like no other country in the world.
And what I would like to see, Mike, and I did this. I forget what shooting it was now. This is how bad it is. It might have been the Orlando shooting. But I had Johns Hopkins has a Center for Gun Study, and I had the executive director on my SiriusXM show, and I said, look, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but what can we do to fix it? What have other countries done? And there are many different policies that we could be talking about, but that we don't, largely because we're locked into this political battle. And instead of people coming together and saying, okay, well, what could we do that would move us forward and make us safer? Everybody reverts to their corners. You know, the gun control folks.
That's false equivalency.
It's not false equivalency. There
it's
are
completely
other things.
False equivalent. And the NRA would love this discussion because this is what they're doing. I agree that there are many, many ways to attack a problem. But when you talk about going to our corners, you're putting me on the same footing as this. And the fact is,
because
I don't feel that way. It's not true.
Yes, it is.
I am right about this. I am right because I am looking at the bodies of children. That's what this is about. This is not about whether you want your or somebody feels differently than I do. This is about bodies of children.
It's about individual liberties and what the government has to do.
You know what?
It's true.
Individual liberties that were designed in a time, and you can interpret the Constitution many, many different ways.
Mike,
I'm talking about right now.
Yes, and
all
so
I care
they.
About is right
so,
now.
So are gun
no,
rights
they,
supporters.
They're talking about don't take my guns away. They're talking about this would infringe on my liberty.
Correct.
What does that mean? I'm talking about a bloody child lying in a hallway of a high school. I'm not talking about a lofty principle. I'm not talking about that right
Neither
now.
Neither are they. They're talking about the rights that they have as Americans to live the way they want in their country.
Tough. Beans. The fact is, we're dying.
This is why
18 shootings in 2018. 18 shootings in 20. I don't care if they want to live a certain way and go out and hunt and shoot and live on the fruited plain. How many people shoot for food?
Mike, I know you don't care. You asked why I was doing what I was doing, and then I explained the point of view that was unrepresented on the show here, and then you got excited. What I would like to do.
No, I got pissed.
Right. And that kind of encapsulates how this debate goes when you put those two sides on.
I understand
your
point.
And we've already
eaten
out more than half
the show. Because we scream about it, it's worth the whole show, to be perfectly honest with you today. That's the way I feel about it.
Right.
You say we go to our corners and nothing gets done. I'm disagreeing with you on this point right now. My feeling is that I have had my hands up in the air. I have been like Barack Obama, feeling like, I'm kind of resigned to this. And I'm saying things have to change. And I'm changing it with the way I talk about this issue now. This is a sea change for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
You may think it's irrational. You may think I get overly excited about it.
I'm not judging you, and I don't think you're irrational, and I don't think you're wrong.
I think the time is past for having a reasonable discourse. I think we have to be louder and prouder about our feelings on this issue, and that's probably why I'm talking about it today. When you talk about half the show, well, you know, it's so top of mind today, it's tough for me to get by that. This is calculated on my part. I'm going to be louder about it. I'm going to be more vocal about it, and I'm going to say the way I think the vast majority of Americans feel about this. And that's where I get into the weeds with you on the discussion. There are millions more that feel differently. How many more people think that maybe banning, let's just say specifically, banning assault women, why are you getting so frustrated?
Because I don't have, because I'm trying to.
You don't have the passion that I have on this particular issue?
Right, and you've kind of made your point here, and now we're just repeating it.
Well,
I got what you're saying.
But you said to me before that millions of people feel differently. The majority doesn't feel differently. The majority of people, including NRA members, want assault weapons banned and background checks and reasonable gun legislation that's been blocked and lobbied against by the NRA. Is that a fair assumption?
Now you have to pull the polling, and I don't have that at my fingertips. But the point being that, yes, there are folks who would say we should have background checks. I believe you are correct with that. But that's not, you're not talking about background checks, Mike. You're talking about getting rid of all the guns. That's what you said. We need to be radical. We need to get rid of all the guns. So that, I would say, does have millions of people, and I'm not sure you're in the majority about that. I don't know.
Okay. When you talk about getting rid of all the guns, no, I wouldn't be in the majority with that. What I'm saying is I think handling this this issue delicately with people that think the way I think is something that frustrates me.
Because absolutely.
It hasn't done any good doing being like that, being resigned, as you said. That was the word you used about Obama. It doesn't seem to do any good.
These
shootings are still happening. So,
Mike, you're not wrong. You're not alone. And I think this is a debate to have. And I think we should have it, and it should be louder, and it shouldn't always be squelched, you know, by special interests, you know, while it is, you know, hot. It's always like we always have this. It's like I feel like I'm in Groundhog's Day. I've done this so many times, and
makes it even more insane. It's a crisis. It's a crisis, and you might be exasperated by the argument, but the fact is the argument will continue until this stops.
I'm not exasperated by the argument. I just, you know my, you know, I look at my role here in terms of kind of bringing, you know, the other side to this debate, and I don't feel particularly equipped to bring that other side, you know, and it feels unfair to our listeners who, you know, who have other feelings. I'm trying to channel that through my own reporting and experience. So that's what I'm exasperated about is that
because they're, you know, probably
I didn't come to the show to, you know, to spend the entire time trying to argue against you for the sake of, a more interesting and rounded debate. Right. Like, and so I guess that is my,
I know that you see your role on this program as kind of grounding the representing the other side, being objective and doing that. And there will be days like this where it's hard to do. I know your role is very, very difficult, but I can't, there's certain things that I just can't calm down about. It's why I started this show so I could do it. And it's frustrating for me and for people that may feel like their point of view is not represented. On this particular day, I will say in future episodes on future topics, I think we'll try to be a little bit more balanced. But on a day like this, it's almost impossible for me to come in and do that. It truly, truly is.
I have experienced that.
What? Well, but it's funny because can I talk about one other thing? Do you want to talk about John Kelly or do you want to talk about going on Fox News?
I thought we were going to talk a little bit about the White House and it being.
We can talk about the White House
shambles. We have like four or five other things.
I just wonder where you really come from sometimes. Because you seem a little more, sensitive to this than just necessarily not being able to represent everybody equally. I get that vibe a little bit.
So here's what I don't like. I don't like rants from either side. I don't like the extreme on either side. And when, you know, and I understand where it comes from, but I think there are arguments to be made in all of our great public policy debates, this being one. And I don't love kind of sitting here, you know, trying to have a discussion about something and, you know, kind of you feel very strongly about this. I don't have, you know, I look at these issues from both sides because that's my training and that's how I lived as my career was to say, okay, well, certainly. And I've talked to hundreds of people. I've talked to the parents of kids who were killed. I know Tom Mauser, who was his kids were killed in Columbine. He's been a longtime advocate for gun control. I've had many interviews with him over the years. I've heard this before. And I think there are other sides to this. And what makes me uncomfortable is just, you know, not feeling like I am, you know, I was not prepared for a show where we were going to talk about guns for the entire show. That wasn't what we were going to do today. So I guess that's what I'm frustrated by was this was a topic. And so I'm not prepared to roll out all of the other pieces around this very complicated debate because you felt like ranting today. So I guess that is, I was not prepared for that. So that's what makes me uncomfortable.
All right.
Okay. I sent you a little note that said another day, another mass murder. I thought that.
And then we had five other things on it and added a sixth. So I thought, okay, we'll do 10 minutes on this and then we'll, you know, talk.
So I caught you by surprise.
Correct. It's we're now 35 minutes into the show.
If you had more time to prepare,
if you said
you might have been able to bring some of the
I want to talk about
other
guns.
Sides' point of views. Is that it? I'm glad then that I caught you by surprise.
Right, because you could dominate the show and talk about how you.
It's not about dominating
it.
The show. I'm glad that I was able to, you know, say my piece on it. I didn't.
Sure.
It was the intention was not to get more airtime than you. That's,
No. I don't
dominate the show.
I mean, dominate the show with this topic. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as I said, much like the space shuttle blowing up, much like the World Trade Center, I put this up in the same area. I really do. I think that when an incident like this occurs, and especially when it's less than 2 hours from my front door, that's unfortunately top of mind for me.
Sure.
And, you know, before taping here, I was watching the latest press conference. It's right there. It's right there. And, not a lot of sympathy for you, not a lot of sympathy for people that might have a differing opinion than I have today. And yes, have I ranted? I don't like the word rant. I've just kind of expressed my passion for the particular subject of the day. I think that I like to think of myself on other issues, keeping it light. You know, that's I'm told by a lot of people quite often on a regular basis, just what you told me, you know. Chill out a little bit. It's frustrating. It's exasperating. And that's why I wanted to do a political show so that we could, you know, so I could get this off my chest, these issues. That's the whole point of it, you know. And I don't know. I mean, it's something where when it comes to this particular issue, it's a very, very difficult thing for me to rein it in. I have difficulty doing it.
And for good reason, because we're talking about life and death, we're talking about children who are dying, and we're talking about, you know, a exasperation about this issue. You know, I don't disagree with any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do try to do a show that examines these issues, and, you know, I look at trying to, you know, always bring a little bit of context to it, so I tried to do that today.
So you feel like you weren't successful in doing that because you weren't prepared to spend this much time talking about it.
Right. And because you know,
perhaps for a future show we could actually have more of a dialogue with that. But I mean, you also don't want to, you know, this is not a point counterpoint show, right? I kind of say my piece and then you kind of bring some facts to the table, and perhaps there weren't the amount of facts that you wanted to bring into the discussion today. And I will chalk this one up to emotion, and I will chalk this one up to this particular day. And no regrets. And believe me, I've thought about it about social media. I've thought about it on my other show, and I've thought about it saying it to you right now. But nobody's getting an I'm sorry for me on this today. Maybe I'll be like our president, where he's not able to say I'm sorry. Frankly, I'm able to say I'm sorry a lot. Not when I'm thinking the way I'm thinking today.
And I don't think you owe anybody an apology. You know, I think your feeling about it is shared by millions of people.
And I wish I could wave a magic wand and we wouldn't have to have this debate.
I do,
so
too. I
we
mean,
wouldn't like, have this situation. It's just,
and,
you know.
And, you know, I guess my thought, where I come from it, you know, when I brought up the Hopkins, you know, Center for Gun Safety, is they have looked at and studied all kinds of public policies that we're not debating in this country. And, you know, when I say I think there are ways to help solve the problem, you know, and then you say, well, that's, you know, we need to go radical. That's okay. But like my point of view is there are other ways, and it's not a, it's, it,
it when you it, say
it's
there
not,
are
it's
other
not,
ways,
it's not a
example.
Surrender. It's, well, this is what I was not prepared for. That's my okay. point is I didn't go back.
Then that's got to be very frustrating
right,
for you.
It's super frustrating right. Okay. Because I have thoughts about this, but I wasn't prepared to talk about it for 45 minutes. So okay. that is kind of what, you know, where my frustration comes from. And I don't think it's a surrender to the NRA to say, look, let's look at what other countries did and see how that worked. And are there ways to implement
that? I agree with you. But I am not, I think we would be in a much better place right now without this framing of the debate, the talking points from, I'm not talking points here. And I think that when you look at the NRA, you hear the same arguments all the time. And I think that there is a list of, I call them smoke screens sometimes, and that's what frustrates me. I'm working on raw emotion. Make it go away. Any way you get there. Talk about Johns Hopkins and the Center for Gun Controlling Gun Violence. Any way we get there would be fine with me. If we never had to have this story again, it would be fine with me. Mm-hmm. When I rant and I bloviate and I talk about guns, take away the guns, that's a visceral, emotional reaction to why are these weapons so important to so many people. It's always been difficult for me to get my head around.
I don't have a good answer for you there. And I often try to bring that answer when you say, well, why? You know, and I don't have, you know, I am not of the gun culture. I am like you. So I feel like I'm not bringing, you know, my piece of this to the table today because, you know, I have a similar background to you, right?
Like, well, about this? Because we are, the show is in its infancy, and because we can do whatever we want, how about, are you up, do you have an extra 15 minutes today? Would you like to move into the stuff that we were going to talk about?
Sure.
Like John Kelly and his future at the White House? Because really, I just felt that I needed to get that. To do it.
And look, and this is, and our listeners are like experience us kind of figuring out how this show works as we do it.
That's fine. I've done that my whole career.
Yeah, no. That's what I think is exciting and cool about this show. I think it was a fine thing to do. I think you clearly are pumped up about this, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a really good segment and interesting conversation.
And let me point out about you, Chris, and I think everybody should know in the way that Chris attacks his role on this show, Political Persuasions, is to maintain objectivity, to present opposing viewpoints, to rein me in when he feels that I have overstepped as far as facts. That is his job. So when you're feeling, and I know your frustration, when you're feeling that you don't anticipate me going as long as I do, and that you're not able to do that successfully, that's your point of frustration.
Right.
Would that be accurate?
Yes. It has nothing to do with your point of view on this at
right.
all.
But I feel like sometimes you're going to smack yourself in the head, and I want you to stop doing that because you are prepared for a lot of other stuff here. And perhaps we revisit this on another day. There's certainly going to be plenty of opportunity, and you put it on the docket the next time you're ready, and maybe I'll come armed with a few more facts and figures myself.
I think it's a conversation worth having, and I have a lot of complicated feelings about it because, I just can't with all these dead kids. I just can't.
It's hard. It's hard to do.
And it's a very difficult thing to get your head around. I get emotional about it. And having had to cover it, it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. I mean, you got to talk to, you know, parents whose kids were gunned down at school, man. Like,
you see it on these reporters, watching the talking heads, you see this to be in the belly of it. You know, PTSD comes in a lot of different, you know, and they talked about it today, you know, you don't have to have family members that were affected by this. Anybody in that school now, anybody in that town for that matter.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
look at this.
It's a black widow spider that reaches out and grabs a lot of people.
Look on those kids' faces. I mean, you know, who lived through it. I mean, those kids will never be the same again.
Let's revisit it. And I think that I would really love to have a less emotional debate on it, certainly on my end. You weren't emotional about it. You were emotional about the fact that you wished you had been more prepared about it. I was emotional just on the day. I'd love to revisit it and do it on a future Political Persuasions where maybe we could bring in an expert, just somebody with statistics. I'd like to know the real facts about this situation. And, you know, ultimately, we as Americans all probably want the same thing, and that's for our kids to be safe. And I'd love to have a magic wand to wave and see if it would happen. And I'd love to revisit this in the future. You know, there are so many things that we came in before this shooting occurred that we were ready to talk about. The status of John Kelly, which I've been dying to ask you about, was paramount in my mind because I wanted to ask you. You've covered the White House. You've been there. You know the machinations of what happens behind the scenes. This was the bulletproof man. This was the man that, you know, was going to come in the knight in shining armor. And now, I don't know, maybe you can tell me, what is the status of this guy? Is this Rob Porter scandal going to bring him down? I'm just curious about that.
I mean, certainly he's lost a lot of the trust and the invincibility that he had in the White House from the staff. There's questions about was he truthful with the staff? Did he lie to the staff? Who knew what when? You know, we had stories coming out of the White House. Oh, the background check hadn't been done. It wasn't completed. Then you had Christopher Wray this week, the FBI director, say, oh, no, we completed that last summer and we followed up in November. So I don't know what they're talking about. So it raised all these questions about, you know, this should have been a story that was a day or two. And it was so bungled by the White House and their response to it that we're over a week now. And we've seen a speechwriter who resigned under a cloud of domestic abuse allegations. We had another White House staffer who resigned because his security clearance didn't go through because he had smoked marijuana at some point. So you had have all of these questions about, well, who's in the White House and are they cleared? I mean, Rob Porter, to give you some sense, as the staff secretary, everything that comes across the president's desk, he's seeing. So the presidential daily brief, which is, you know, Donald Trump doesn't read it, he's told us, or his staff has told us, but it is the briefing that tells you everything we know from our intelligence community.
And Jared Kushner reads it too, right?
Jared Kushner reads it, absolutely. So
two guys without security clearance read the daily briefing. The man at the top that should be seeing this without any other eyes on it, he's the guy that doesn't read the damn thing.
Absolutely. And I think Kelly's got problems. This is not the first time we've seen the invincible man kind of fall, right? I mean, he had to generally the imprimatur, but, you know, I think of, John Sununu under George H.W. Bush, right? Mm-hmm. He was a tough guy. Don Reagan under President Reagan, who got crosswise with Nancy Reagan.
Donald Reagan, who was Donald Nancy's, kind of Nancy's buddy, right?
Well, he got crossways with Nancy Reagan.
Oh, that's right. He butted heads with her,
and it was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to choose my wife over you, bro. You're out. So this has not been something that is unheard of, but it's bad when staffers are calling reporters and saying, like, look, I can't 100% vouch that what I'm about to tell you is true because I don't know. And that's what we're starting to see. And that's just a really bad place for this White House. And it goes to the chaos there. They want to talk about taxes. We had an infrastructure bill this week from this president who said, here's what we're going to do.
Building roads, building bridges.
Here's how we're going to build in America. There's something that everybody, I think, could get behind. Our airports kind of suck. Our bridges are falling down. Like, here's a way, you know, we could have a debate about that. It was dead on arrival, as was his budget, which also came out this week that we didn't hear about because this scandal and now this terrible shooting have just kind of taken over the consciousness here.
As far as John Kelly's White House as chief of staff right now, how much of this comes into play? You hear about McMaster's, you hear about Mattis, you hear about the guys that have been at the dance before, the people that have experience, but ultimately, all these things that happen with Rob Porter, with not paying attention to the FBI vetting that they did for these people, this all seems to fall under the category of these folks just haven't been at the dance before. This White House is stocked with a lot of people that are kind of new to this ball game. And when John Kelly came in, I thought, well, here's a guy that's been around this before, and he's going to straighten this type of thing out. And when he's the point guy for apparently seeing some of this intelligence on Rob Porter and not doing anything about it, it's a surprise, I think, to a lot of people in Washington. Would you agree with that?
I think it's a surprise. But when you read, and I don't know if you've had the chance to see Chris Whipple's piece in Vanity Fair, he sat down with Reince Priebus for like the first extended interview about his time there. And mm-hmm. Reince was basically like, yeah, everything you've heard, multiply it by 50. That's basically how bad it is.
You hear that from lower level people that have left the White House too. Everybody's kind of saying it's a clown college.
Everybody's saying that. And Whipple wrote a book called The Gatekeepers about all he sat down with every previous chief of staff he could. who was still alive and served a president, because it's basically the second most important person in all of Washington and all the country. And they all sat down, all the previous chiefs of staff sat down with Reince Priebus in the White House while Barack Obama was there. It's kind of a tradition. Current chief of staff for the outgoing president organizes this. And they were like, look, man, you got to get your ducks in order. You have to have a stream of information. You have to have a hierarchy. And the feeling from Reince, you know, that these chiefs of staff got was that he wasn't getting that, right? Like, he was kind of looked at it as, you know, his job was to babysit the president and not create a structure inside the White House.
Showing some nepotism, too. That doesn't help the situation at all.
Does not help the situation at all. And then you had Kelly come in, and we thought we would get that command and control, and we did a little bit, but we still didn't have the vetting that had to happen. And then when there was crisis, it wasn't handled appropriately. It's so interesting to me that Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, who's had to stand there and answer these questions for the last week, is now essentially pushing for Kelly to come out and explain what the hell happened, because she's like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, like, that's basically.
And when you talk about the press office at the White House, and you talk about Sarah Sanders, when you come out and you're going to throw the FBI under the bus, as far as we have an ongoing investigation against Rob Porter, and
we didn't get this, but into his background, right?
We didn't get these in a timely way. She's basically tackling the FBI. You don't do that before the FBI director is going to testify on Capitol Hill and refute every single thing you said. And he's not doing that with an agenda. He's doing that because he was just saying, here it is. This is the date it was completed. Yeah, the systems at the FBI are functioning in a far smoother way than the systems at the White House right now. And in bureaucratic Washington, the systems win ultimately, don't they?
And to make your point on a much broader scale is, you don't take on the FBI, you know, the day before the FBI director goes on the Hill, but you don't take it on at all. And we've seen that with this Trump White House, he has tried to undermine the FBI. That's not a place you want to be, man, because then you get, you know, you get special investigations.
And let me offer this. Russia. Let me offer that about that situation. You don't try to undermine the FBI, Chris. And I think that one of the things that this president does, he likes to have his dessert first. And the fact is that I don't doubt that there might be a strategy that ultimately this Mueller investigation might be problematic for our White House. If we start casting some doubt on some of these organizations, maybe that's a strategy. Say what you will, it might not be a good strategy, but it's their strategy. If you're going to use that as a strategy, you don't do it too soon. And it seems like this White House has just been so hot to trot to slam these organizations, the Justice Department, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And if you do it too soon, by the time, say, the Mueller investigation comes out with its report, it might be very well too late, because you've already shot your wad as far as this is concerned. That's what I just think sometimes they're over eager. they're over eager. It's a mess.
And that's the Bannon influence of the deep state, and they're out to get us. Remember, like, before Donald Trump, Republicans loved law enforcement. They loved the FBI. It was the Democrats and the pesky ACLU with their, what are you guys looking into our backgrounds for? And it was like, why don't you love law and order? Now you have Republicans, thanks to Donald Trump, who, when you look at the polling, distrust the FBI. And that was largely thanks to Donald Trump and his move here.
Right.
I mean, but it's always dangerous to take on the guys who have subpoena power.
And you know, in this administration, it seems like it's every hour, not every day now. It's every hour something's breaking. And, you know, you have these great juicy stories like the one you brought to me today about Scott Pruitt at EPA that loves to fly first class. This would be a mega headline in any other administration. On this, it's like page 12.
It's page 12.
That this guy, what is the deal with this dude? He only wants to fly first class on the taxpayers.
Apparently Scott Pruitt really has a taste for free wine up front, because he's flying first class, and reporters have kind of tried to dig into this, and the answer was, we got a waiver in the beginning of the administration to fly first class. It's a security concern. And then the reporters rightly point out, actually, you need to get a waiver like each time you fly first class, because coaches what you do on taxpayer dollars.
That sounds similar to the other guy that they booted out of there, because he was doing the same thing where he needed to, you got to do it every flight, right?
Exactly. That HHS secretary who got booted for, you know, flying around and taking military flights. So, you know, so they had great, the Washington Post had great details. He had flown, you know, at six times the expense of the coach seat that his aides were in, right? So he's up front. His aides are in the back of the plane sitting in coach.
That tells you he's a nice guy, doesn't it?
He's swell.
He's a doll.
And and then the question is, well, he puts out a statement and says, well, basically, you know, it's a security issue because I don't want to get harassed by the rabble rousers in coach.
Oh, God, that's the elitist argument. I don't want to go back with the common man.
Which is like not going to play well with Donald Trump, who, you know, who basically tossed his HHS secretary for doing similar stuff. And, you know, the Washington Post breaks a story. And then 2 days later, he's spotted in National Airport getting on first class for his next flight. It was like either indifference or incompetence. Like he just doesn't care, it seems. He's just like, I'm fine first class, man. I'm a secretary now.
And one other word that I would use, perhaps entitlement. I think sometimes it's entitlement.
Rob Spiewak points out, he makes a very good point here. He said, who would even know Scott Pruitt? Like if they saw him, right? Yeah, like would anybody be not. Like, you work for Donald Trump. You, sir, are you love polluters. Like, you know, like
political like junkies like me, yeah, I would go out of my mind.
We know.
We'd know, but nobody else would give a rat's ass.
Rob's
whether he
right.
Gets on
like,
the plane
Rob could
or not.
Bump into him in the line of McDonald's and be like, you know, not know.
Well, to be continued, we're going to find out with this. I will say that Scott Pruitt's story, when it, you know, you would think that would be top of mind, but not on a, you know, on a week like this. We do a little thing on Political Persuasions when I'm not ranting and Chris is not reining me in, that we actually have a little segment called Your Mail.
Oh, wait. Are you not going to bust my stones about being on Fox News? Is that
We've got 5 minutes. Do we have 2 minutes to bust your...
Yeah, go ahead. You know, I mean, like, I, you know, you wanted
you
to...
You went on Fox News, Dana Perino's show,
I bust
show,
your
right?
stones all the time, so I feel like this is only fair turnabout.
Well, you did within this show. You were, like, chastising me, so I mean,
I wasn't chastising.
So how long have you been a Fox Morning News contributor?
I've never been a Fox Morning News contributor.
When is the Dana Perino show on?
It's on in the afternoon, but I'm not a Fox contributor. Okay. I just
would you like to be?
I would be
if
on
the money's green, Freights.
Yeah, there you go. Here you go. MSNBC, Fox, CNN, whoever wants to pay me to be a contributor, I will come talk to you again.
Is there a particular experience being a panelist on any of these shows? Is there one particular show that stands out in your mind? A show that you said, man, that is a fun deal. I like the way they run. I like the way they do it.
You know, it everybody runs a little bit different. That's a great question. You know, the Dana Perino show that you're talking about. So I knew Dana because she was a White House spokesperson for George W. Bush. She's been on my show, and I like doing her show because she's not a Sean Hannity type, right? She has like a very kind of more even-handed.
She has that reputation.
She has that reputation. She does at Fox. So she's a Republican. She's a Republican, no doubt about it. But she also kind of takes issue with a lot of the things that are happening. So I like that kind of dialogue. But the point being, if Rachel Maddow wants to invite me on the show, I'm happy to go. So
I would love to see you. It was an opportunity
as opposed to a preference.
Or Chris Matthews. I'd love to see you.
Oh, I've done Chris Matthews. So there's a guy. It's very difficult. You don't want to do a remote with Chris Matthews. You don't want to be in another location because there's no way you can get a word in edgewise.
It's tough.
He'd be like, so Chris Freights, Congress, what's going on there? I mean, they're the worst, right? And you're like, oh, man, come on. Come on.
Which is a worse experience, going on that show or me ranting about guns?
Toss up. I'd have to think about it.
Oh boy, that's harsh.
No.
All right, let's get to the mail
So we got some reader mail.
Gotta get out of here extra 15 minutes today. What's going on? All right, go ahead. Lay it on me.
So Adam LaCrosse says he loves the show. It's fantastic. You wrangle Mike very well. I guess maybe not today. I'm on the opposite side of the political spectrum, but I like the reasonable tone of the discussion.
I hate today's show.
Nicholas Marr says, dude, you missed the Eagles parade to tape Political Persuasions? Dedication. And then here's one question. Sandy O from Faux DEA says, just listen to the latest political persuasions. I totally agree with the new leadership needed in the Democratic Party. We need to inject some new blood, especially for 2020. POTUS, what about Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom? Older Dems had their time and they need to let the next generation take over. Mike, that was your point. Do you think those are two good names or do we need
fresher
faces?
I'm a Kamala Harris fan. Okay. There is something about her quiet dignity that appeals to me. And I think that would be an interesting person to see on the national stage. This is the lieutenant governor in California.
Gavin Newsom. Yes.
I'm not familiar enough with him to know. I know he's just dreamy.
He is.
But I'm not, I don't know a lot about his deal. I know he's had a little bit of a wandering eye, at least some of the stuff that I've read, but I'm not sure. But if you're going to, between those two, I like Kamala Harris, and I'd like to see how that shakes out. It's interesting. We got a long way to go, but I think that the Democrats need to get their ducks in a row. I really do.
Well, there you go, Sandio, from Mike O'Mara, and we'll end with Trumpy on Air.
Yeah.
Trumpy on Air says, love the podcast with Mike O'Mara. So there you go. That's our
thank you very much
today.
That's it. Well, that's it. A special elongated political persuasions. So we were able to, get Chris's shower and we were able to do the extra 15 minutes to calm him down and all this. And we will be back with another episode and to be continued on a lot of these subjects, like a lot of the subjects in the country. For Chris Freites, this is Mike O'Mara. Hope you enjoyed it. And really, if you're going to yell at me about this week's episode, just send the letters to Chris. Believe me, read them. He'll read them to me off air and on. Trust me on that. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Political Persuasions. If you have a comment or question for Political Persuasions, please send it to @Freites on Twitter. That's FRAITES. Thank you. You can download Political Persuasions on iTunes, MikeOMaraShow.com, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are found. You ought to go see the Mardi Gras. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.